the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 200. Pretty amazing.
My name is Tom Cagley, and together we will explore the varied worlds of software process improvement and measurement on the Spamcast. The cast will cover topics that deal with the challenges of how work is done in information technology organizations as they grow and evolve. The show will combine commentaries, interviews, your feedback to serve up ideas, options, opinions, advice, and even occasional facts. In a nutshell, the cast provides advice for and from practitioners, methodologists, pundits, and consultants.
Spamcast 200 features my interview with Ellen Gottesdiener and Mary Gorman. We discuss their great new book, Discover to Deliver, Agile Project Planning and Analysis. If you think agile planning and analysis are topics that bear examination and discussion, we have you covered this week.
Comments and feedback are welcome. There are a number of ways to share your thoughts. Email Spamcast at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-6111. It's my intent to share all emails and voice messages. Some disclaimers. During interviews, the views expressed by my interviewees are theirs and theirs alone, no matter how wonderful they are. The views and opinions expressed by me are mine and do not represent those of my employers or other third parties. However, if you'd like to borrow my views and opinions, I am always happy to share with a little attribution.
The interview in the Spamcast 200 is with Ellen Gottesdiener and Mary Gorman. We discuss their brand new book, Discover to Deliver, Agile Product Planning and Analysis. Ellen Gottesdiener, founder and principal with EBG Consulting, is an internationally recognized facilitator, coach, trainer, speaker. She is an expert in agile product and project management practices, product envisioning and road mapping, business analysis and requirements, retrospectives and collaboration. Ellen works with global clients and speaks at numerous industry conferences. She is a certified professional facilitator and a certified Scrum Master. In addition to co-authoring Discover to Deliver, Agile Project Planning and Analysis with Mary Gorman, Ellen is author of two acclaimed books, Requirements by Collaboration and the Software Requirements Memory Jogger. Mary Gorman, Vice President of Quality and Delivery at EBG Consulting, is an expert business analysis facilitator, coach, and trainer also. She has deep expertise in business systems and product development. Mary works with global clients, speaks at industry conferences, and writes on requirements topics for the Agile and business analysis community. She is a certified business analysis professional and a certified Scrum Master. Mary was instrumental in developing the IIBA Business Analysis Body of Knowledge and the IIBA Certification Exam. Mary is co-author with Ellen Gottesdiener of the recently released Discover to Deliver Agile Project Planning and Analysis. Ready for Agile Product Planning and Analysis? It's time for the interview.
Ellen Gottesdiener, Mary Gorman, welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thank you, Tom.
Ellen, Mary, you recently wrote Discover to Deliver Agile Product Planning and Analysis. By the way, has that actually been released yet?
Well, yes, this week, actually. The book is in print right now, and literally this weekend, Mary and I are traveling down to Agile 2012 conference, and we'll get our hands on the book for the first time on Sunday when it's unpacked. Yeah.
So you're going to do an unboxing video like any number of other people that I've seen do?
What do you think, Mary?
Sure. That sounds like a great idea.
Well, we'll maybe just take pictures of each other picking the book out of the box or something like that, Tom.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think actually people do react well to that. Okay, so Ellen, Mary, let's start at the beginning.
how do you define agile product planning and analysis? You know, those words can have a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people.
You're absolutely right, Tom. And this is why for us, in the number of years we've been working on this book, evolving through this, it's been almost like an agile process itself. But we see that agile product planning analysis is this continuous process. This is ongoing discovery and delivery of an evolving product. And typically what we're finding is that it's so important to remember that planning is done continually in tandem with analysis, the idea that these are so interwoven. So Ellen had a recent client experience. Maybe she could just speak to a vivid example of this.
Yeah, I mean, in product planning, you are also doing analysis. And when you're doing analysis, you're doing planning. So what Mary's referring to, a client that I worked with a few weeks ago, and what we did was we pulled all the stakeholders together. We like to call them product partners. And they were working on very transparently what value criteria were for all of the three partners. And we have to get some kind of understanding, a shared understanding of what those values are, even though they may be in conflict. So a lot of these practices are about good collaboration, actually, which seems to be a thread in my life and my practice. But the thing that really makes a difference in planning and analysis, when we're talking about agile product planning analysis, is having good conversations amongst all the stakeholders. We call these structured conversations. So together they're using a discipline. It's very disciplined in many ways to pick what is the next most important thing to plan. So planning and analysis were woven in together. And at this engagement with this client during this release planning workshop and then iteration planning workshop, they were constantly referring back to their value criteria, but also taking some hard-nosed analysis about the features that they were looking at.
That whole collaboration, creation of values at that level, do you see, and if it evolves, do you see it going from conflict to at least a peaceful sort of coexistence? Does it ever evolve back to a much more difficult position where these product partners, stakeholders, don't quite understand where a product is going over its life cycle?
Well, certainly there's this dance, if you will, and I think it often starts with confusion, not conflict. The confusion is that many times the partners don't have a shared understanding of the goal, and I think that's what you're referring to, Tom, is the ability to have that focus on what is the overarching purpose, goal, value, and then moving to a point. So you might have a view, we call it the big view, that might be out 2 years or more. And without that big view, I think there is a lot of confusion. And sometimes I think your word conflict, it does lead to conflict. Whereas with that big view aspect, that's something that's sort of like a cornerstone. And many of the teams that we work with often are very good at developing. And they have developed their cadence for that so that we have the development community in gear and ready and able to produce working software. What often happens is they have to put their heads up and work closely with the business community and the customers to make sure that they are all on focused with that highest value for the particular planning horizon they're working on. So there is the need to have this partnership. And when you have a partnership, there is sometimes confusion and sometimes conflict. But we're finding with a true partnership that the shared appreciation, the shared goal, this shared understanding of value has been really powerful.
So is shared understanding of value, shared understanding of goal, is that the definition of a partnership, or are there other components in terms of how you define the word partnership?
Well, first we have to understand who the partners are. You know, that's an important aspect of being transparent with the product and forming a a successful partnership. So we, the three partners that we talk about are the customer, the business, and the technology partners. So these are all the people who are, you know, good old stakeholders. That the importance of understanding who those people are don't go away. What we want to do is understand the different types of partners within those categories of business, customer, and technology, and who is going to come to the table to explore what the values are that they have. Because, you know, you brought up the point about this, the C word, conflict, that they may come with distinct and potentially competing values. But if they can transparently describe those values, so if in the on the business side we have a product champion or a product manager, a product owner who has ultimate decision-making authority, but she understands that the technology partners have a value in exploring some kind of technology, say around the cloud, for architectural value that they have and supporting the portfolio, she now is better educated to do some balancing in the final decision making. You know, she's also thinking about the end user who's directly using the product, which is one of the customer partners, or who's going to buy or support the building of the product, who's, you know, the chooser, if you will, the person that's going to buy the product. So the partnership first involves who are these people, what are their values and conflicting values, and being also clear about who makes decisions ultimately about what to build and when.
Have you ever run into, between the two of you, have you ever run into a scenario where there really isn't a common goal for whatever reason between all of these stakeholder parties?
I think that many times it's just not communicated well. There is a goal, but not everyone is aware of that. So I think that's one of the level setting aspects. That's true whether you're doing agile or not. But I think the reason we focus on this so much is in agile product planning and analysis, we can't wait to learn that. This has to be known upfront as soon as possible.
And they usually do have, sometimes they'll be goals, but they may not be common. So there's some exploration that they need to have about what is common and to get this shared understanding. And so some of the aspects of, you know, what we've been working on for a number of years with agile and lean teams, we've brought to the table so that they can have good conversations and talk to each other with the same language, sort of a visual language, about features using seven dimensions, which really encapsulates functional and non-functional. And sometimes if we go really down into detail of some of the features, then we can come back up and find where they really do actually have a shared understanding of where they need to go with the product.
That whole conversation words creeps in. It's amazing how easy it is to walk away from conversation and attempt to use other mechanisms to quote-unquote communicate, which tends to fail. These days, many people tack on the word agile on a lot of different things. It sounds like you're actually going back to sort of base agile principles in terms of defining agile product planning. How is that different from other frameworks, whether it be lean or other frameworks?
We feel very congruent with all of those aspects. What I think we've brought together based on working with clients over the years, as Ellen said, is some structure and something very practical. So we've gotten this structured conversation that Ellen mentioned a few times, which is firmly grounded in the partners, the three partners, but also in the seven product dimensions. And taking it to this very practical, tangible level, I think, has just been a way to enhance what's happening in our community, and it's been readily adopted by our clients as seeing it's a very pragmatic way for them to have these conversations.
You use the term structure, and to some folks that would bridle a little bit. Is process and structure an important part of actually finding a mechanism either to communicate or to gather this kind of information and keep it fresh across the life of a product?
Well, yeah, I mean, I certainly think so. If you look at the Agile Manifesto, one of the principles talks about having conversations, specifically good face-to-face conversations. And taking aside for a moment the face-to-face aspect, conversations can go in many different directions. People can be talking, having conversations. If they're using different languages, they're not sharing meaning. So the basis of conversations is having a shared language. So we have to have some kind of structure in order to talk the same language. And that's part of the aspect of this structured conversation is that we have some mechanisms to really use this meta pattern that we found over and over again is really powerful, which is to explore and then evaluate and then confirm. So we're exploring options for product needs, and we use the 7 product dimensions to do that. And we use our value criteria to evaluate and select a subset of options that are important and useful, usable, feasible for the product at that point in time. And then we confirm to make sure we know how to verify and validate what we're going to build next. So it's very repeatable, and the conversation can occur, which is really cool, we've found at any level of planning, whether you're talking about that big view that Mary mentioned earlier, which is usually like a product road mapping view from a planning perspective, or whether you're talking about the preview, which is really a release planning perspective, maybe a couple of months, or now, what you're doing now, the iteration, or if you're using a flow model like Kanban, what your work in progress is right now. So the conversation can happen at any planning horizon and with any type of product, and there's consistency and structure to it.
When a group gets good at this, a team, and hopefully it is truly a team, whether it's the big view or the daily sort of view, who facilitates this? Is this a process that the entire team pursues? Or are there roles that generally champion this kind of a view in?
Well, that's a great question, Tom, because I had an experience last week where this team, it became so democratic but in the course of 5 days that you couldn't tell on the 5th day who was playing what role. They were all equally contributing, and so it would be hard to tell who's a developer, who is the business person. They were sharing equally. Now, to get started in a more formal setting, you would typically have, as Ellen mentioned, a planning session. And then it's wonderful to have a neutral facilitator who serves the group. But some of the key roles, obviously, would be a product champion, who often is that person who makes that final decision. So you hopefully grow these skills. They're facilitation skills that maybe it starts with one person in the group who might be more familiar with that or more agile with it, if you will. They facilitated conversations before effectively. But then the group itself, I think, learns from each other. And the analysis skills to be able to take something and analyze it across those 7 dimensions, as well as the planning skills. So, yeah, there are the classic agile roles that we know of, but we like to think that the learning across the different roles, that they do, in fact, become very, how would you say this, Ellen? How when we see these folks working together?
Collaborative.
No, thank
collaborative.
You.
I mean, it really, Mary's spot on as far as that goes. In terms of the classic, let's say, roles on an engineering or developer team, development team, who might facilitate the conversation could be any of those people. Oftentimes it's a scrum master / project leader who builds those skills. Sometimes, you know, it's also the analyst who can be, once they can step back from their domain expertise and serve the group in a neutral way, that neutrality as a facilitator and facilitating the conversation is important. And the team will eventually learn to self-manage the conversations. I mean, I worked with a group 2 months ago where there was no formal analyst role, and the project lead was needing to be sort of self-recruited into going back into engineering work. So the person who stepped up to this was an engineer, a developer, who had a lot of analysis skills, and he called himself the analyst leader for the coaching and for facilitating the conversations. So it really can be anybody. You know, some agilists talk about generalizing specialists. We want to draw on the expertise and the specific skill sets and let the team figure out who is the best person at that point in time to lead that conversation.
So do you guys see teams and individuals on teams expanding their skill sets over time to take care of these things? So in essence, bringing down the walls, or at least blurring the walls between sort of the formal corporate roles that many organizations still deal with?
Oh, absolutely. Ellen and I have written about this, and we sort of coined the expression a number of years ago, it's the goal, not the role. And when you have this agile team working together, there is a synergy that typically comes. It may take a little while to grow, but it really is very, very powerful to see that in action.
Do roles, you both have been working with agile and lean teams for a while, do roles evolve as the work evolves, things change as the project teams move forward, the work that they may be doing might be different at the beginning of a project versus at the end of the project. Do roles evolve within the team?
They potentially could. I think what evolves is people's depth of knowledge and their skill sets. Some people may want to switch over to try different activities. For example, a lot of times we'll see analysts that are transitioning to Agile pick up testing, in particular acceptance testing activities, or vice versa, where they may be not have a lot of people that are formally in the role of an analyst, and a tester will take on analysis tasks and contribute in that way. The idea, the kind of cool thing that we've seen is that when people have an understanding who are the partners and what is the goal, what are the values and the criteria we're going to make decisions, decision-making is clear and transparent, then they can make those switches as need be, and people just step up to the plate and say, thinking of a time where an analyst said, well, I'll help with the testing because the tester was spread across multiple teams. So she said, well, if you spend some time with me showing me how to run these scripts, I will step into that. So in that way, it's evolving. The skill sets are evolving, but also their collaboration is evolving.
In the book, Discover to Deliver Agile Project Planning and Analysis, you earlier were describing sort of a bigger view of product and then bringing it down to a more tactical level as the project or the product needs it. In a dynamic product, that sort of that two-year view might be evolving on a quarterly basis at the same time. How do you keep all of these layers of product view synchronized?
Well, one of the things that you'll hear a lot of Agiles talk about is rolling wave plans. So you plan to replan, but at the same time as you plan to replan, you plan to reanalyze. So you're continually analyzing and planning, but you'll have multiple levels of plans at multiple views. So you may have, and many teams will start with sort of that now view, the iteration plan, and usually once they get into a delivery rhythm, they realize they need to go and look a little bit further in time to the preview, that release view. And eventually they'll have the big view. Not all Agile teams will start with the big view. So you have big view, that's the basically product road mapping or portfolio plan view, the preview, which is essentially the release view, and the now view, which is the iteration or work in progress view. So as you end each planning cycle, or each delivery cycle, I should say, whether it's an iteration, a release, or the entire roadmap, as you end, you're retrospecting on the product you're delivering, both the product and the process, and using that feedback as input to the next cycle. So you're revising and your plans at all planning horizons. You're continually revising them, and they're interconnected.
One other aspect, Tom, when we think about a product, and we've already mentioned a few times this idea of the 7 product dimensions, keeping track of what are the options. So we might say, let's say it's the second quarter, and we know that we have this product, and what are the action options versus the data options versus the control options? And I shouldn't really say versus. I should say, you know, which user options are most important for this quarter, and what actions would they actually need? So we can track this product by looking at those various dimensions and looking at the options within each of those. So you really do get this holistic view. And we think about the high value options may actually reside in the backlog for some period of time because they are obviously unrealized and not validated options until they're selected in for development. But using this ability to look at a product holistically over time, we found that slicing it along these 7 dimensions has been really helpful.
Super. Guys, who is the audience for this book? Who would you, if you were writing your marketing blurb, who would you be pointing this at?
Oh, my.
We tried to drink our own Prosecco, as they said, when we were working on this book and did a vision and personas and thought about their journey or stories that they would use, you know, for accessing the book. So we could be thinking about product managers from a role point of view, product managers, project managers, analysts, testers and QA people and developers. Anybody who needs to engage in the conversation to figure out what to build and when to build it. Mary, you want to add to that?
Well, yeah, it's really the shared resource. We're finding that in our client work that the entire team, including the business folks, are using these concepts. They're using the symbols. They're using the language. And it's sort of leveled the playing field, if you will, having this standard vocabulary that they're using and the symbols. So the list that Ellen mentioned, absolutely.
So it gets back to having a structure so that you can all talk the same language. So it does cut across all of the groups, it sounds like, or all of the individual roles within getting work done.
When we are doing workshops, and some of these workshops might be a half a day, some of them might be an hour. It depends on where the group is working. The structured conversation, just as an aside, doesn't have to be a formal sit-down or talking about it. Sometimes it's just standing up. People have to discuss something for 5 minutes. And so I wanted to put that in as a note. But this group of diverse folks working together, last week, for example, with a client I was at, the product champion is standing up at the wall pointing at which of the dimensions she wanted to speak to. And a developer then shares that, oh, well, I think we really need to talk about value. So we use this visual language and these symbols to represent the different concepts. It's sort of a way of a connection for visual thinking. And we've created these universal symbols that folks are using holistically. And then in the book, what we've done is taken that and drilled down to particular practices and techniques and tools. So again, the other funny part is the use of color. So people will, within a very short time, say, oh, we're spending too much time in purple. Well, what's purple are interfaces. We need to spend a little more time talking about red, which are controls. And so what happens, and last week was a good case in point. We started out the week using certain worksheets, And by the end of the week, the worksheets are gone. And our client contact said, oh, you were right. We didn't need them by Friday. We were thinking that way. So it was a way for them to, in essence, have that communication became very natural.
I was going to, and I've asked most of the people I've interviewed that are authors, you know, how their book is unique. But I think you guys have described a lot of the unique attributes of this book and why it's different from others that are on the shelf. Do you think you missed anything that makes it unique?
Well, maybe I mentioned a couple of things. We designed the book so that you could access it in a variety of ways. You don't have to read it front to back. Some people really like a case study, and they want to read about a case study actually happening and then go to the concepts. Others may want to start with the key concepts, look at some really detailed examples, and then maybe look at a case study. So we used feedback from, we did three releases of the book, trying to use agile practices in building the book, you know, in discovering and delivering what to create in the book itself. And a lot of our reviewers said, we love this case study, punch it out more. So we actually expanded the case study to cover the conversation of this example team at all three views. And the book starts with that, but you don't have to start with that. You could jump into the concepts. And then what we did later on in the book was we describe in a lot of detail the conversation itself, how to hold the conversation, how to use that explore, evaluate, confirm, and also how to adapt your practices to different types of delivery methods. And Mary, you want to add to that?
Well, we also visually tied this together. At the top of the each page, it actually spreads, and there's a navigation bar. So it gives you a sense of where you are in the book, so you could quickly swivel if you want. And if you wanted to look at something about a particular tool or technique, you'd visually see where you are and where you could go.
Wow. So did either one of you two, as a child, get into those books where you could, in essence, build your own adventure kind of books? Is this a natural outreach of that?
No, as a matter of fact.
I don't recall that specifically. No. Maybe you're drawing on something Freudian that we'll both have to explore in our private moment, Tom.
With this, so we're talking a lot about Agile and Lean. Would this book be of value to others that aren't using Agile frameworks at this point?
Well, absolutely. In fact, we have a number of clients who are using more traditional practices and thinking about Agile because they're hearing a lot about that. And they're seeing how the clarity and sharpness that you get by thinking about value as a way to make choices about what you're going to build next can be used to pull them, if you will, into Agile Lean practices. And really, a lot of these practices are truly just universal good analysis, planning, and engineering practices. You know, thinking holistically about the product, we have these kind of lousy names with non-functional and functional requirements. We want to go beyond just thinking about those two meta categories. That's where those seven product dimensions come into play, whether you're doing traditional, whether you're doing agile. And certainly a lot of traditional teams are realizing that they can't just do one-shot delivery, that they're going to reduce risk and have a better chance of building a valid product for a valid customer base if they build it in smaller delivery cycles. So we've been getting a lot of traction as well with folks that are using more traditional practices.
Mary, Ellen, you wake up tomorrow morning and you find you have the power to change any two things impacting product planning and analysis. What would those two things be and why?
Well, I think the biggest thing for us has been this sense of partnership and creating an environment where it's a level playing field, I keep saying, that they can equally communicate, and the having that focus on value. Each group, each stakeholder group has its need to describe their value and then participate in balancing, because as Ellen mentioned earlier, often there may be conflicting values. So I think that that would be one of the biggest things I could see that would improve our ability to communicate and ultimately deliver high value products.
Ellen, a second?
Oh, okay.
Mary, a second?
Well, definitely, to sort of play off of the idea of the partnership, people having good conversations and transparent decision-making about what they're going to build next, and using a shared language, and first getting, you know, where are we going, getting an understanding of where are we going and why are we going there, and the collaboration on a team that not just how we're going to be successful in our marketplace, whether you're building internally or externally, but how are we going to be successful as a community and draw on each other's skills, serve each other better. Those are just vital, because requirements and all the work around analysis and planning, requirements in particular, is the topic for which all stakeholders have a stake, and it's around which everybody needs to come together in a collaborative way. So we're really hoping that having that shared understanding and striving to get that and get closer and closer to that every day is something that teams will do more and more.
So we still need requirements.
We'll always need requirements, regardless of what method, what technologies are out there. We need to, maybe the way to think about it, going back to our conversation earlier about the views, the big view, the preview, the now view, is there's always going to be wants, and there's always going to be needs, and there's always going to be requirements.
Ellen, Mary, how do people find you? How could they continue this conversation, engage the two of you? How would they do that?
Well, we've got a website that's just starting, discovertodeliver.com, and we'll be growing that incrementally. We're taking an agile approach to building that. There'll be resources that people can download, and certainly Ellen and I are heading off to Texas on Sunday. We're doing our half-day session Monday morning on the product partnership, and then we have two other sessions that we're doing. We're out in the public. We speak at various meetings, whether it's the IIBA meetings and testing group meetings and product management. We have a website, the EBG Consulting. We have a newsletter. We blog. We're on Twitter. So I guess those are a number of possibilities.
As you guys both know, at the end of the cast, I always open up the platform for my interviewees for sharing all of this incredible information to promote anything that they'd like. There's two of you. Have at it.
Well, I think the first and most important thing is we want to get the word out with the book. So the book is called Discover to Deliver, Agile Product Planning and Analysis. And if you go to discoverdeliver.com, you'll find out how to get your hands on the book. So that's the first thing that I want to mention. Mary, you want to add anything to that?
Well, the rich website is ebgconsulting.com. There's a lot out there about news and various events. And certainly the newsletter that we have, you can sign up at ebgconsulting.com. We also do training and client engagements, real work. We have an Agile Jumpstart where we work with the team, and that's a wide range of our services.
Wonderful. Mary Gorman, Ellen Gottesdiener, authors of Discover to Deliver, Agile Product Planning and Analysis. Thank you guys for participating. This has been phenomenal.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
In the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 201, I will feature an essay on sizing work before estimating and planning, and why that makes sense. As I've told you a number of times, Murali Chimaturi and myself wrote Mastering Software Project Management Best Practices, Tools, and Techniques. We have new news about our book. It has recently been translated to Chinese and is available on Amazon. Hey, I guess they knew I was going to go to China on vacation next year. Click on the link in the show notes and buy yourself a copy today. Some upcoming conferences. Obviously, conference season is coming. I'll be speaking at the following conferences and looking forward to meeting up with all Spamcast listeners and contributors. I'll be at AgileTrack on November 9th in Toronto. www.qaagiletrack.org/2012. I'll be at Test Track again in Toronto, November 5th through 8th at www.qaitesttrack.org/2012Toronto. I'll also be speaking at ISMA 7, October 28th through the 31st in Phoenix, Arizona, www.ifpug.org. And I may actually attend Agile DC. Looking forward to seeing all of the Spamcast listeners. Let's have a beer and let's talk software. The Spamcast blog and show notes can be found at www.spamcast.net. Contact Spamcast at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-6111. I also Twitter. And my Twitter ID is tcagley, so please track me down. It's my intent to share all voice messages, emails, Twitters. Your comments, questions, rants are appreciated and will help to facilitate a dialogue and build community. Let me know the topics that you would like to have covered and the people you'd like to get interviewed. Get involved. The music on Spamcast is made available by the PodSafe Music Network at www.podshow.com. The featured song is by 2012 and is titled Last Battle. Information on the band can be found at www.myspace.com/2012vision.com. 2012 does an incredible job with experimental electronica. Be sure to support 2012 and all PodSafe artists. Spamcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. If process improvement is a never-ending journey, why do so many people ask, when will we arrive? See you next week.